Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
All right, welcome to this week's edition of Where Did the Road Go? And this is going to be part two of the conversation with myself and Joshua Cutchin and Jeff Ritzman talking about my experiences. This is going to be a little bit weirder than last week's part, as you're about to find out. And still only scratches the surface of some of the stuff that's happened to me. But I hope, again, that this will help people out there if they've had similar experiences. And feel free to contact me. I'm always interested in talking to people who have had experiences, whether they're these type of experiences or not. I think overall it helps us all understand this stuff better the more we can hear from other people who have had similar things happen or not so similar things happen. If you want to support the show, become a patron. Go to the website. You'll see a link for Patreon. It's only $3 a month. You get a bunch of extra content, and I have a couple really cool things I'm going to be posting here in the next couple of weeks. So you don't want to miss that. And now, without any further ado, let's get into part two of Jeff and Joshua talking to me about my experiences. Here we go. All right, and this is part two of this conversation I'm having with Jeff Ritzman and Joshua Cutchin about my experiences, which I'm not usually on the end of.
Where did the road go? Origin.
How Jeff and Joshua can botch an interview.
why don't I throw out one of the really weird things that happened? Yeah. Actually, you know, why don't I throw out the one I submitted to Project Core?
Ah.
Because this is one of the weirdest things that ever happened to me.
Okay.
And I didn't realize, I didn't know what Project Core was at the time. Someone sent it to me and said, you should fill this out. And so I did. So I used to take walks around my yard. As I've said, I live in the middle of nowhere. And it's not really the middle of nowhere. I have neighbors, you know, 1,000 feet that way or whatever, but three sides I'm surrounded by fields. And I have a decent, like, 4 acres of property. And at the time, I think it was 6. So I would walk out back toward the fields where it was very, very dark and you could see all the stars in the sky. It's an amazing view because there's not a lot of light pollution. And one of the days I walked out there, and this has happened other times as well, I was getting these flashes of light, like the entire landscape would light up. And so I'm walking along. It's like someone took a picture, except the flash bulb was incredibly powerful and it would, I could see everything. And then it would have a slow decay and then everything would go back to normal. And this was happening at a semi-regular pace. And I was just like, what is that? And there was a full moon. And so I'm standing on the back of this hill looking up at the stars. And there's some clouds moving across the sky and they start to cover the moon. And as they start to cover the moon and the moon starts to dim down, the moon pops through the clouds and starts shaking.
Huh.
And I said, well, that is the weirdest optical illusion I've ever seen. And I look down and I look back up. Moon looks normal, waits a few seconds, pops through the clouds and starts shaking. And I'm like, okay, what's going on right now? Then I notice out in the field, where there's nothing. I mean, there's like Amish on the far side of the field. There's no lights. There's no nothing. There's this dim light sitting in the middle of the field. I have no idea how far out it was, but it's sitting near ground level, and it's kind of dim but noticeable. And I'm thinking, what's that light? That's weird. There's no lights out there. And initially, I didn't pay that much attention to it. And so the moon thing's going on. The flashes of light are going on. And I'm just like, what is happening? And I felt fantastic. Or whatever, you know, like I felt really good this night. And I'm just like, I have no idea what's going on. This is freaky. And I start paying a little more attention to the light. And the light is blinking on and off. And I start counting it. And it would be on for 7 seconds, off for 7 seconds. It may not have been 7. I don't remember the exact number, but it was an equal number. And it was on for a bit and then off for a bit. If I was looking at it, however, once it went off, it would not come back on until I looked away. And that started really messing with me, too, because I'm going, okay, I can watch it out of the corner of my eye, and it comes back on. If I'm watching it directly, it doesn't come back on. But it won't go out when I look at it. It'll stay on the full 7 seconds, go out, and that'll be it. And then I'll look away, watch out of the corner of my eye, and it'll come back on and resume the 7-second cycle. Now, of all this, nothing else happened. But I had no means to explain what was happening that night. And I still don't fully know, but I suspect. I mean, if I had to venture an explanation at this point, I would say that light was being caused by some kind of, you know, earth energy. And it was somehow interacting with me and causing these slightly hallucinatory sort of events to occur around me. Because obviously the moon wasn't popping through the clouds, but it was the freakiest thing I've ever seen.
Well, you know, there is a long history. I mean, not to be completely reductive about this, but there's a pretty substantial history of people seeing the moon change into a UFO. I mean, that's not unheard of thing.
But it didn't change. Yeah. It looked like the moon. It was just vibrating.
Yeah, that's weird.
It was really freaking weird.
And that sounds Fatima-like, you know.
It does sound... That's a good... Yeah, it does sound Fatima-like.
It's like I've always focused on that light in the field as being related, you know, being a key somehow, you know, whether that was an intelligence there or whether it was a reaction to whatever was going on that was creating a light in the field, like an earth energy type of response that was also causing me to hallucinate in some way.
And I can't believe I haven't asked this question by now. How close to Pine Bush are you, Sarah?
Pine Bush. I don't even know where Pine Bush is.
Pine Bush, New York?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm in dead center of New York State, like right in the middle of the Finger Lakes.
Okay.
Now that I think about it, I have heard of Pine Bush.
Hudson Valley.
About 4 hours.
About 4 hours away from Hudson Valley.
Okay. 3 to 4 hours.
Okay. Well, the flashes of light, I'm glad to hear you talk about, because as you know, I've talked about that, I think, on your show before, too.
I don't remember you talking about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Go back in my podcast history. Look at, you know, like old Paracast shows and old Paratopia shows. Yeah. I mean, that essentially is what drove people away from us, because that got to be so pervasive that, you know, our friends were seeing him, and it wasn't just like outside. It was also in the house.
Right. Like it was like a camera flash.
It was like, I used to describe it as an Instamatic camera, like a flash cube. Like cube has such a property to it that, like you say, is that slow decay. Whereas like flash cubes today or flash bars today, they don't have that. It's a flash and it's over. Whereas that cube had that, you know, they had that slow decay to them.
Yes,
and
exactly.
That's exactly
like
what it was like.
John Keel experienced it too. And he said the only time he ever experienced it is when he was moving, like in the midst of like moving from one apartment to another.
Oh, okay.
So in a liminal state.
A liminal state. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that would happen to us like in the car, and we'd look around in the car like, what just popped in the car? Like what happened? Outside you'd get it. Namely, like, and oddly enough, always when I would stick my key in the door. So getting ready to pass through the threshold of any house or home. And then at the mall, like walking across the parking lot to the mall. And one of our friends, one of Lisa's girlfriends was walking with, and she stopped right in the middle of the mall parking lot and said, "That's it, I'm out." And she turned around and walked to her car. And that was the last time we ever saw her.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, that was it. And she, like, she knew, because Lisa would tell her, you wouldn't believe the weird crap that's going on. So that I totally understand what you're saying there. Also the periphery of a light coming on and off or interacting with you in such a way as you're looking at it and yet it doesn't want to do anything until you look away or vice versa. You know, I can relate to that. I totally get what you're saying there. But
because the fact that it wouldn't come back on when you were looking at it means it's somehow interacting with you. It's not just a light going on and off. It's actually responding to you looking at it.
The thing with me is like, I don't think that I've ever had that outside, like in the open air, but certainly the lights that I photographed in the hallway here on the other side of the wall from me, that was very much that kind of thing where it wouldn't show up if I was looking, but yet peripherally I could see these flashing, moving colors. And yet when I stick a cell phone around the corner and just start snapping, I get it. You know, like I take 50 pictures and I get two. That feels like, okay, I can kind of like relate and see that. But what is it? What is it? I have no idea what that, what would that be? What would it be for?
Yeah, well, it's almost like it's just on the verge of our reality. And if we focus too much on it, it pushes it back out.
Yeah. Yeah. Almost like bringing the idea that's internal, external kills it.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thread runs through a lot of this stuff too.
And the moon shaking thing did eventually stop that night, and the mm-hmm. flashes kind of calmed down a little bit. I've had the flashes other times as well. Oh. That wasn't the only time I had that happen, but, the light was there even when I went inside. It was still just sitting in the field, blinking on and off. And there's never been a light there. Never since, never before.
Was the light reflecting light on upon the ground or the trees or anything?
No, it was just a self-illuminated ball of light.
Okay.
Yeah, there was no shine like you would get from a flashlight or anything like that.
Okay. Would you think it would be omnidirectional by looking at it? Would you think it would be a... It wouldn't be a targeted spot like at you, right? Did it have that, like I'm trying to gauge the quality of the light. Was it like, you know, road flare weird? You know what I mean when I say that? There's a weird aura that a road flare has.
It looked like almost like a dim lamp.
A dim lamp. Okay.
Yeah. It was not bright, but it was distinct. I mean, I could see it. It wasn't, you know, but it wasn't a bright light by any means. It was very dim.
Or like
very singular,
or like a TV glow, maybe.
No, not really.
No.
I don't know exactly how to describe the quality of other than like maybe a kerosene lamp about to fade out a little bit. You know.
Okay. Here's the description I'll put to you.
Okay.
From now, I'm not talking about color. Let's luminosity and look and feel of this. Could you compare it to the cherry on a cigarette from 20 feet away?
No. Well, maybe.
That kind of dim, that kind of, I'm not talking like, you know, fired up. I'm talking just like, somebody sets a cigarette, you know, onto a table or something and walks away. The area goes black. What you see there is that hard to determine distant, hard to.
Yeah.
Hard to put your finger on, like, I see it, but I don't see it, and that kind of...
A little brighter. I mean, I could definitely see it. There was no mistaking that it was there. It just wasn't bright. And again, you remember I'm in a pitch dark environment. Aside from the full moon, there was no other lighting in that area.
Uh-huh.
It also didn't freak me out. It was just interesting.
No, yeah, yeah. That's okay. I can handle that kind of stuff. I can easily say, like, I wish you'd have walked or had some kind of like walk towards it or something.
I walked around the yard. I didn't go into the field itself, but I walked back and forth across the yard and it looked exactly the same through every direction.
Hmm. Interesting. Because, you know, Ted Phillips and Marley Woods, I don't know if you've had him on the program to talk about that.
No.
But that was one of the interesting things that I found about him describing the lights that they see in Marley Woods, which is these enormous balls of light. I mean, enormous. I mean, they're not tiny dots of light. These are big objects. And I asked him, one of the first things I asked him, I said, was it casting indirect light? You know, was there reflected light coming off of the single object being lit? And he said, no, that's the weird thing. But that's what gives it such a surreal quality, is that there is no reflected light whatsoever, no matter how intense or big the light is. And if you ride towards them, in other words, if you'd have had an ATV and you'd have rode towards this thing, I would probably bet that... the way you describe it sounds very much like a Marley Wood type of light. And he said you could ride, leave one person at the vantage point you were looking at, ride towards the light, or do an end run around it, around the back of it. And the person would be on the radio saying, it's right in front of you. It's right in front of you. You're right on top of it, and you see nothing.
Yeah, I've heard that.
So that kind of, like, I've got one of those in the backyard every so often that Lisa and I were just actually talking about tonight. It's a little red light, and it looks like a cigarette. It looks like somebody has thrown a cigarette in the backyard. And it's very clear. It's very obvious. But we haven't had the kind of interaction that you're talking about with the periphery and all that. This is like, you can look right at it. So I don't know what that could be, but the flashes, I'm gratified to hear somebody has this.
There's a couple other weird light things I've had. Like one of them, this one was really freaky. This is my friend who was there when the person walked between us. This was one of the other experiences that really freaked him out. We had gone to a concert and Overkill. I think we went to see Overkill. We saw Overkill so many times. I'm pretty sure it was Overkill. And we get back to my house, and he was going to come in and get something. And we turned the car off, and we're sitting there for a moment talking. And all of a sudden, we hear this yell. And it was, there was no attack or decay to the yell. It was very quiet, but very, very distinct inside of the car. Like, it was just kind of, we're sitting there, we're talking, there's a pause in the conversation, and suddenly we hear, and it just stops suddenly as it started. And it must have gone on for maybe 20 seconds.
Wow.
And it stops. And he looks around, he's like, what the hell was that? And I'm like, sounded like a yell. He's like, it was a yell. Where the hell did it come from? You know, again, there's no one around. This is late at night. Yeah. And it wasn't a normal sound. You know, normally if someone yells, it builds and then it decays down as, you know, as they're yelling. And this was dead on, like it was just generated. And so I said, all right, well, I don't know what it was. There's nothing we can do about it now. And I get out of the car and I'm like, let me go grab you that thing or whatever. He's like, I'm not waiting out here. He gets out of the car, and now he's on the far side away from the house, and he's looking around like, you know, is there somebody near? Is there someone around? And I start walking toward the house, and we had this gigantic oak tree right next to the back door. And as I'm walking under the oak tree, I see this kaleidoscope of lights on the ground, almost like someone had a kaleidoscope above me and was shining the lights down on the ground. But all I see are the circles of light on the ground. And they kind of like mix and match. They're all primary colors. They just kind of mix and match into each other and then disappear. And I went, oh, lights. He then realized how far away I was and went, lights, where? He almost yells. He's like, what are you doing way over there? And he comes tearing over to where I am. But there's no way anyone could have shown those lights. I mean, above me was solid, thick oak tree. They couldn't have been reflected from anywhere. They moved. But there was no beam attached to them. They were just there on the ground. And it lasted, I don't know, 5 seconds? Long enough for me to get a really good look at them, and then they just went away, and nothing else happened.
Huh. Let me ask this, because I've been useless throughout this entire program. I apologize. And you, I don't even know that you're going to be able to answer this, because like so many of your very early things are fuzzy, if not there at all. Which I think is part of what's making it hard to like get an origin point to move forward on this for me. Like that's where I'm at. Mm-hmm. It seems like a lot of your experiences as a whole have happened around the general area where you live. So how many things can you think of, or can you remember, that say you went on a trip to Michigan or Wyoming or something, like when you were far away from home, did you ever have anything while you were completely removed from your area?
Well, I've had stuff happen in other locations. Yeah.
Okay. So it's not
limited to here.
It's okay. That's what I was getting at. It's not like your experiences aren't relegated to like the upstate area of New York or New York in general.
Yeah, they're pretty much, but that's because I don't go very far outside of it.
Okay. I know. Right. I understand. Okay. Okay. Because I have been to places up, you know, like I said, Pine Bush, Hudson Valley, and all. These are exceedingly weird places.
Well, yeah, it's sort of getting into that whole burned over district thing, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, and I guess the other thing is when you just taking, for instance, the flash of light, with the light in the field, what was going on? Where were you? What were you doing there? What were you looking for? Were you looking for anything?
No.
Was it complete happenstance situation that you were even in that position to see these things?
I would go out sporadically in the middle of the night and just take walks. It was a very common thing for me to do.
Okay. All right. So you clearly don't have a fear of the dark, right?
Nah, only once. That's a whole nother experience.
Okay.
All right. The gift that keeps on giving, yeah.
And that is one of those things that's one of the only other times I was really freaked out.
Okay.
And that was around the same time. I'm trying to look up dates, but I have so many notes here. Okay, so this was this thing with the darkness was in May of 1995. It started end of 95. Anytime I walked outside by myself, you had that eerie quiet. Everything was dead quiet. If I tried to walk through the yard, it sounded like something was walking right behind me. It felt like there was always something right there. There was never a sound.
So was this full-blown Oz effect? No wind in the trees or anything? Okay,
cool. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I went out with some friends. They, you know, I'm outside with them. Everything's fine. I go in the house. They leave. I go back outside 2 minutes later. And everything's dead quiet. And it's rarely dead quiet here because we actually have a pseudo pond where they had dug a lot of dirt out for another part of the yard, and it just kind of grew into sort of a pond swamp area. So there's tons of like frogs and crickets and everything over there. So this is April 20th, we're recording this. It is loud when you outside. There's so many insects and so much noise going on. It's never completely quiet for more than a few seconds. And this went on for a few months. And it was all precipitated too by, if I remember right, I don't know if I have the note here. I want to say it was precipitated by a dream where I had walked downstairs into my kitchen and I looked at the porch door. And the door was kind of being like there was this darkness just behind the door trying to open the door. And I was like, what the hell is that? And then I woke up. And then after that is when this started happening. And it went on to the point where I couldn't walk outside at night. Like it was freaking me out really badly. And eventually I went out right before dawn and I sat on the stairs in front of my barn and I said, you know what? If you're going to do something, do it. Otherwise, stop it. And I sat there about 20 minutes. And all of a sudden, the noise just came rushing back in. It was just like, and all the sounds returned to normal, and it's never happened to me since.
If you're going to do something, do it. Are you crazy? I mean, wow.
Yeah, that takes some, that's what I'm talking about, like this whole like idea of you being the battle hardened experiencer. Like I can't think of many people who would do that.
I don't even know that it's that. I think that when I think of Soraya, I think of somebody who just listening to him talk here and the other things that he's mentioned throughout the time that I've known him. We haven't known each other a year. I mean, it's not even been a year.
I think
what I always have gleaned from you is that you're somebody who knows what this is.
I have no idea what this is. I just
well, you
it.
Say you have no idea, but I think that somewhere in there, I think you know what this is.
Oh, quite possible. The same could be said of you, and maybe all of us on some level.
Yeah, but I have a lot different reaction than that. I mean, and it's not to say that I run, because I don't run, but the feeling of proximity. You know what I mean when I say that? There's a feeling of proximity when I'm outside. at certain points. Now, I've never noticed that everything goes quiet. That has happened. That has happened before, but that's only happened right before something happens. I mean, something that is in my face happens.
Right.
That has been a few times, but not to that degree that you're talking about. And that's that feeling of proximity that I can't stand to be around. I can't stand to be around it. So I've got to do something. I've got to occupy myself with something to try to get myself away from that feeling. Whereas you're confident enough in the way you walk with this that you are able to say, if you're going to do it, do it. Otherwise, knock it off. I have said that to walking up and down the steps in my house. I have said that to whispering that I hear on the steps in my house and in the bathroom. I said that. I said, knock it off, and it stops. I'm very somewhat comfortable with the ghost a la mode stuff around here that seems to be like common fare. I feel like I've got a handle on. When it comes to the things that you're talking about, I think my uncomfortability with it comes from the idea that it's a lack of control for me. I feel like these things are able to do things that take me out of a position of control. Whereas you don't seem to have that worry. Do you?
I enjoy the ride more.
Yeah, I mean, you're like a prime candidate for psychedelic drugs. Because
same time, the reason I don't do drugs is because I have a little bit of a control thing going on. Like I feel like I don't want to lose control of my consciousness. Like the stuff around me is fine, but actually losing control of my consciousness is something completely different.
I've always said I've got enough weird stuff. So why would I want self-induced psychosis?
The other thing is, like, with all the weird stuff that I experience and already having trouble, you know, like with the moon shaking. Okay, well, I know that can't be real, but I'm watching it happen. I'm worried I'll lose that objectivity. If I start doing LSD, I think it's going to make it harder to determine. Yeah. Like, okay, is this just, if I had done lots of LSD and then that happened, I'd say, okay, it's just coming back on me, you know?
Right.
It's from the tripping I did, you know, 2 weeks ago or something like that, but never having done it, I could say, okay, I know it's not drugs because I don't do drugs.
Exactly.
There was one of the, this was kind of a minor thing, but it still freaks me out just because it was impossible. So I used to wear a Baphomet. I definitely identified more as a Satanist at one point, like LaVey Satanist, not like devil worshiping Satanist. At one point, I don't as much now. I probably identify more as a Buddhist now. And I never liked the ego stuff from the Church of Satan, but I like the basic, be responsible for your actions. You know, everything's fine as long as you're responsible for what you do type of an action. I really liked that. I really liked the way he phrased a lot of that stuff. And I had a Baphomet necklace that I would wear, and I couldn't put it on over my head. The chain was too small. My head was too big. So I had to clasp it anytime I put it on. Like it wouldn't, the chain would not fit over my head. So I get home from work one morning and I go to get out of the car, and the chain had broken a few times here and there. And I feel the thing fall off, you know, my neck. And I'm like, ah, the chain broke. Great. And it falls down out of the shirt and lands on my shoe as I'm getting out of the car. And I'm like, all right. And I pick it up. Chain's not broken. Absolutely no way that thing could have come off my neck without breaking the chain. And I'm like holding it up going, yep, that's in one piece. My interpretation of it was I'm supposed to stop wearing it. So right. I guess I'm not going to wear it anymore. And I actually put it on the mirror of my car. And in one of those like random little things, one of my friends at the time, she goes, why is the Baphomet on the mirror now? And I said, I told her what happened. She's like, oh, I'm like, so now it can protect the car. And she's like, all right. And I brought the car to the mechanic once, and I took the baphomet off and left it at the mechanic's. And when I got it back, I didn't put the baphomet back on right away. And like 2 days later, I totaled the car.
Huh.
And she goes to me, it's because you took the baphomet off. And I'm like, what? And she's like, you said it was there to protect the car. You didn't put it back on. And I went, all right.
Huh. Okay. So what I'm kind of coming to here is that there would be so many questions to ask that probably have pretty profound and baffling answers, such as why the draw to magical practices?
Because I wanted to know what was out there. You know, okay. I liked fantasy stuff. I liked Dungeons and Dragons. I liked all this other stuff.
Uh-huh.
I was actually, and Josh knows this because he's read some of the early chapters of my book.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, I had this intense fear of God. My parents were not particularly religious, but they were very they were Christian in name only.
Okay. Well, and then their explanation of death didn't help things either.
And that's what did it. That's what set off this almost neurotic fear of death. Is that when I was one of the few things I remember from being a really little kid is our dog died, and I didn't understand what that meant. I was maybe 4 or 5 years old at most, and I was like, why is the dog not getting up? And my mother, in explaining death to me, told me to close my eyes and plug my ears, and that's what death is like forever.
Oh, that's great.
And I'm sure she meant well by this, but it was the most terrifying thing in the world to me.
Yeah.
So I was absolutely like neurotically paranoid that I was going to die because, oh my God, I don't ever want that to happen, you know?
Right.
And so I stayed away from anything that was, you know, even though my understanding of Christianity wasn't very much, it was enough that I kind of like, you know, like I would never touch anything that was like Wicca or anything like that. That stuff's all evil. Even when I got into metal, there was still a little overhang of that where I was kind of like uncomfortable listening to certain bands going to sleep.
Huh.
You know, which was like, you know, 13, 14 years old, maybe. And I'd be like, well, I don't want to listen to this band because this they have all the satanic imagery. I'll listen to something that's not like that when I'm going to sleep. And when that shed, when I finally realized how ridiculous that was, because it was just, it became this inborn sort of belief. You know, like it wasn't totally conscious anymore. It was just there. When I finally kind of examined that and threw it out, those doors burst wide open. I'm like, I should be looking at all this other stuff, you know?
Okay.
And so I got into Wicca initially because a friend of mine was into it. She was really into it. And, you know, I borrowed a couple of the books and I went, wow, this is really fascinating. And then I did research on my own and went, wow, almost everything in that book was bull. Because, you know, it was kind of like Wicca's an ancient religion and all this stuff happened and all this stuff happened. And then I looked in actual like historical accounts and went, none of this happened. This was created by these people in the 1950s. All right. Well, it was a nice story anyway. And then slowly from there, it was just the gate was open. And then it's like, okay, well, Wicca doesn't really do it for me. And then I met this other woman who was into Crowley and LaVey. She got me into both of them. And I was like, oh, I really gel with Crowley stuff. As far as his way of thinking about certain things, because he approached it, you know, with that, what did he say? The aims of religion with the method of science.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, that appeals to me, you know? And so that's when I really started experimenting with it and going, does this stuff work?
Huh.
And I've always done a lot with dreams. Dreams, you know, like I've had so many weird dream experiences, so much information portrayed in dreams. And I also learned at an early point I was able to send people dreams.
Okay.
And that was one of those things. I was literally listening to a King Diamond record, Conspiracy. And at the end of the, you know, concept record, you're familiar with King Diamond.
Yes, right, yes.
So at the end of one of the songs on Conspiracy, you know, King's sister says, I'll send you a dream. And I started thinking, is that something someone could do? And so I would like create like a little sigil of somebody. I wouldn't tell them I was doing it. Create a little sigil of someone. I'd put it under my pillow. And then as I was falling asleep, I'd try to concentrate on them. And a lot of times when I was going to sleep, it was close to the time that they were waking up. And then the next time I talked to them, I'd just be like, hey, so you have any interesting dreams? And they'd be like, oh my God, I had this really freaky dream about you. And I'm like, oh my God, this works.
You're exhausting, Soraya.
You're right there, Jeff.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm just trying not to say or do the typical things here, because it's obvious that you're steeped in marginality. It's obvious that anti-structure is the way you live. Yes. You know, much like me and probably every other experiencer out there of weird stuff. It's hard to nail down the origin event of a lot of this stuff and when it started. But you've had the spread. That wouldn't fit into, even though I think, you know, it's like most of my stuff applies to the UFO thing. It's certainly a spread across the board of stuff. The UFO thing is just how I kind of stumbled on, well, what about that weird thing? And what about that? And what about that? The thing that I I'm not just saying this, I totally admire your willingness to see it. I too, and this is, you know, I'm getting to this point with Aaron and writing the book, with me, it's like, to broach the idea that yes, I was, very much studying occult practices, or what people would call occult practices. I started with studying Wicca. I didn't practice any of this stuff, never put anything into real practice form, as far as like a lifestyle for me. It was never that. It was always like experimentation with that. Like what would happen? You know, what would happen? And I noticed that, much the same as you, I approached it much from the same way. A girl at work mentioned to me something about casting spells. I said, what the hell are you talking about? And so on the one hand, where I see that you like integrate, this is part of your life now. This is something that you do. This is something that for me that I saw, yeah, it works. Yeah, that freaks me out. I'm walking away. The only one that doesn't freak me out is something like, and I don't know how you feel about him or whether or not you feel anything about him, but like Grant Morrison.
Not really, you know, familiar with Grant Morrison.
What I've come to find out, and I don't know why this is over the years, and maybe it's something that I'm noticing that isn't, you know, like, and you and I are, we're about 5 years apart. People like of our age cloud, like that's a loosely defined cloud. Like, I'm not sure where the cutoff date is for it. Like, we as adults came into this looking at occult practices and maybe dabbling a little bit in these things. That seems to be almost a common thing with people of our age. Not a lot, but certainly a bigger smattering in my mind to people in the 50s or 40s or 60s.
Absolutely. I think late 60s, 70s, and 80s is where that stuff started to get some more mainstream acceptance, or at least come into the more popular culture a little bit.
Yeah. And so when that stuff starts entering into it, of course, it becomes, and I'm with you with how Corelli kind of looked at it, like it's more mechanical science and hacking reality than, you know, than spirituality type of thing.
Yeah.
And Grant Morrison is very much like that kind of guy. Like, he wrote, and he's a comic writer. I mean, that's what he does. You know, and you find out that these comic writers, like the guy who wrote Watchmen, I can't remember his name for the life of me.
Alan Moore.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, these, him and Morrison have been spiritually battling each other for years, you know, because they're both magicians. You know, and you find this out, you're like, what? You know, what is this? And yet this seems to be a pervasive theme in, at least with Project Core, saying that a lot of people who experience paranormal events have at one time or another studied, partaken in, experimented with some sort of what society would deem an occult practice. It's everywhere. And you don't even know it's everywhere. That's the brilliant thing about it. And that's what keeps it in that marginal state, you know, to allow these things to kind of happen. I do believe there's some kind of connection there for that. Like you said, when you began the magical practice, the magical workings, the stuff, it seemed to amp up for you. And,
absolutely.
And my answer to that is, well, of course it did. You know, you're throwing doors open, you know, it's,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
You know,
that was my intent.
Absolutely. And so, you know, and I noticed exactly the same thing in my own life that I got some heinously weird stuff, as in, i.e., jets of blood ejecting from my navel. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there's that. That all happened in that period where I'm looking at, you know, gree-gree bag construction and hoodoo magic and all of these kind of things. All of this stuff kind of bled together. And not long after that came all of the UFO stuff, you know, just blossoming out of, I would say, a general, I think, a cloud of time that is not that definable. You could try to put it in some kind of chronological order, but it's dotty and spotty. Like you're describing over the course of your life, it's spotty and dotted until you reach that point of some kind of mechanical hacking of reality in one way or another. And then these things seem to start to propagate more. Grant Morrison basically said, you know, hey, sigil magic is the thing. Yada yada. He gives this speech to the disinformation conference some years ago that is terrifying. amazingly like hopeful too. If just more people would do it, you know, like we can hack reality. We can make the life we want. It's all about, you know, following this, you know, essential system that he says you're making it your own. Not attaching so much meaning and so much pomp and circumstance to it. It's a very basic thing. It's very, you know, and all of these things, from magical practices to ghosts, to UFOs. I mean, when you look at your life and you look at, and you kind of overlay that as like an onion skin paper over top of like the ghost community or the UFO community. You know, the very fact that UFOs show up in Gulf Breeze is said by one man because people show up to see them.
Right.
You know, it's that kind of overlay that says, well, you obviously care enough about this topic that you are willing to devote time and energy to exploring it. So therefore, the repercussion of that is it shows you that to and fro that in your life that is all over the place. It's all over the place. And so while that's not earth-shattering thing, you know, to point out, it fits the pattern. It all lays into the pattern very nicely. So
I got one thing here that It was one of those things I debated whether I'd even make a note of because I didn't think there was much to it, but it kind of reminds me of your experience a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It says, in November of 1992, I had an incident where I feel a presence in my bedroom directly before I went to sleep. As soon as I went to sleep, I started having a dream of a reptoid-like being leaning over me like it was going to operate or do something to me. And then I immediately woke up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And like I said, I didn't take too much to that because it could have just been a dream based on that feeling that something was in the room, but it just kind of reminded me of you waking up with the big headed thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, for me, I think the really unique part, and I think the part where, like if there is some kind of, I don't know, a trajectory for you. It's like, whether you like it or not, I think that there's a certain inspiration that's drawn from you, at least when you talk about these things, very matter of factly, like that removes a lot of fear for a lot of people when they hear you talk about these things and how you react to them. And that's part of the thing. I feel that I've been wrong in this field in describing my own experiences as, you know, well, it terrified the crap out of me. So, you know, like maybe I shouldn't have said that as much as I did, but I can't negate how I felt about it at the time. Whereas I think you, you approach it with, much more innocence than I do. And who knows why? I don't know why. Maybe I'm just a coward. maybe that's literally it. But I think it'll for me and a whole lot of other people, it stems from this fear of a loss of control over yourself, over what happens to you. Have you ever felt in your time in this and all the experiences that you've had, have you ever felt that this could take you away?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, I don't. I don't think I've ever gotten that impression. Well, aside from the darkness thing.
Okay.
You know, when something was right there in the dark, that, you know, that definitely gave me that sort of eerie, sort of like something could just grab me and I could disappear, sort of thing.
Yeah.
I experienced that once again with the same guy who was with me in a lot of these experiences. We were up in this, it's basically a potter's field. And as I've described in other shows, it's a cliff that overlooks this Seneca Lake. And we were just wandering through the field, and he was on the other side of the trees. And I was on, you know, from where I was. So he couldn't actually see me. And we were just kind of like taking a walk through that area. It was a nice little area. And all of a sudden, I felt like there was something there ready to grab me. Like, again, everything went quiet. I got this really intense get the hell out of here sort of feeling. And was immediately like, hey, where are you? And he's like, over here. And I'm like, yeah, stay right there, you know. And that doesn't normally happen to me where I feel that way, so that was one of the only times I could say where it really felt like something's about to grab me and I should probably get out of here. Like alarm senses went off and I have no idea why.
Okay. You didn't feel that way with the, and I don't even know the story of the massive UFO overhead, feel that for that?
No, not at all. The UFO, I was driving to my radio show, and this was right after I had gotten out of the relationship with the girl with a very heavy Kundalini.
Okay.
And as I'm driving to the show, I look over on Cayuga Lake. I didn't look over. What happened is I got blinded. So suddenly I'm like, oh man, someone has their high beams on coming up from the lake, because it's a pretty steep slope from that road down to the lake. And there's a bunch of, I think even Whoopi Goldberg has a house along there somewhere. And so I'm going, oh man, turn your high beams off. I literally can't see. And so I'm kind of squinting through them. And then I realize it's not a car. It's this thing above the lake that must have been 3 or 4 football fields long. Because and the only reason I know that is because it started to drop down and it was behind the trees. And so as soon as I saw this, I'm like, what am I looking at? And it was the brightest thing I've ever seen. But I was able to actually look at it after my eyes adjusted. And it was like there were lights on the top and the sides. I couldn't see an actual structure. All I could see were the lights. And there were primary colored lights sort of racing each other through the middle of it from left to right. And they would like, as they went off the right-hand side, almost like a video game, they would come into the left-hand side.
Okay.
And I'm just watching this, and I'm going, okay, it's not a plane. I mean, this was, let's see if I have the date here. It was, I know it was 2000. I believe it was 2000. I do not see that. Oh, there it is. Yeah, September 23rd, 2000.
Okay.
So I'm watching, and there's no noise. I pull the car over. I roll down the window. I'm listening. There's not a sound. And I watch the thing very slowly just drop down below the tree line. And that was it. There was nothing else to it. There was no sense of fear. There was no Oz factor. There was no nothing. And I'm going, I can't imagine a single rational thing that could have been. That was just a weird, unidentified flying object. Floating, maybe, more than flying.
How big at the outstretched arm? What would just cover it?
From where I was, maybe body width.
I'm sorry, what?
Maybe body, like if from how big it looked from where I was standing, it would have been maybe the width of my body, but it was quite a distance away.
I mean, that's an unheard of size.
Yes, that's
ridiculously huge. And like I said, what I could tell, because the trees, these big old trees, are, you know, looked like tiny little trees down by the edge of the lake, at least as far down as I could see, and it was dropping below those. And I was just, so, you know, you're talking like 50 trees long.
I mean, MUFONites get excited about something the size of a quarter held at arm's length.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it was immense. It filled, you know, most of my vision. It was so freaking bright. It was unreal.
Any reports that you, did you happen to look?
No. I did look, and even when I got to the radio station, I said, okay, so I just saw a huge UFO over Cayuga Lake. Did anybody else see it? If you did, call me.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And no one called, and I was like, all right. But I never realized the when this happened, you know, like what was going on in my life when that happened, which was a major transition period.
Okay, good. Yeah. All right. Any emotional feeling from it? Any
no.
Anything?
No, nothing.
Just seeing it.
Yeah, it was like watching anything else in the sky, except I couldn't identify what this was.
Okay. And you remember what you were doing just before?
Driving.
And just after?
Driving.
Okay. No seamless break, right?
Like no lost time or anything.
No, I mean, it doesn't always have to be lost time. Just like it can be fairly seamless. Like I was at such and such mile marker and then I was at marker,
every bit of everything. I remember, in fact, I just took some pictures since the foliage is down a little bit because everything's grown significantly since then.
Okay.
So I could get, you know, when I get this book done, I can maybe post a picture and get a better idea of where I saw it for people.
Okay.
But I know exactly where I first saw it. I remember exactly where I pulled over and then it disappeared. Now when I can't see it anymore, damn it, I have a video camera sitting right in the back seat.
Oh, yeah. That's the last thing on your mind, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like I said, I was looking for structure because I'm looking at it and it looked like, you know, like because the light stayed in formation with one another, it looked like you had a solid object there,
right,
and I couldn't see through it. But at the same time, I'm going, these lights are so bright that I wouldn't be able to see through it. So that wasn't a major event to me because that was just like, okay, that was interesting. And now I go to the radio station.
Yeah. You see, was it over a lake?
Yeah.
Was it reflecting off the lake?
I couldn't see the lake.
Oh, you couldn't see the lake. Okay.
No.
Gotcha. Was it lighting up the trees?
No. But again, I don't know how far out into the lake it was.
Okay.
I just know it dropped down into the lakes and was way beyond the trees at that point.
Okay, I gotcha. Was the quality of the lights odd? Not the movement, not the color, but the actual, like, the luminosity,
yes.
The scintillation of it. Was it odd looking?
Yes. Yeah. And especially the fact, like I said, it was so bright that initially it blinded me, but then I could look at it.
Okay. And I guess, you know, by virtue of darkness, it'd be pretty tough to tell. Well, I mean, it descended behind trees. So how far away were those trees, would you say?
Quite a distance. I could pull it up on a map and tell you exactly, but it's quite a distance from where that road was to where the lake is.
Okay, gotcha. All right. And
yeah,
still,
this thing was, it wasn't really close. Yeah, well, that's the thing, because I started realizing how big was it, because I'm thinking, well, maybe it was a toy. And I said, you know what? If that was a toy, it's the biggest damn toy that's ever existed.
Yeah, some kid got a full-size Star Destroyer for his birthday.
Exactly.
Out there playing around with it.
And it was, and where it was, I realize, is right to the, like, if you're looking toward where I saw this thing, right to the left is a water treatment plant on the other side of the lake.
Okay.
I don't know if that had any, you know, anything to do with it, but it just, like, one of the things I started thinking is, could they have done something that would have, now, what could they possibly do that would create this gigantic thing in the sky?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, UFO reports around water is numerous, as you know. I mean, that's a a staple thing. But also around water treatment plants, dams, nuclear power plants, you know, all of these things, they seem to be, you know, magnets of sorts for weird things.
This would have been probably around 11:30 at night.
Okay. So not absurdly late. You would think that people would have seen such a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
That big, that's just confounding.
2000 wasn't, you know, the time period of social media either.
Yeah, that's true. Any other UFO sightings besides that one?
Yes. Couple really, nothing ever major like that. The when another life transition point, literally the day that a bunch of stuff changed, not necessarily for the worse, I had gone outside and I was putting something in the shed at night, and I looked up and I watched this, what looked like a shooting star, shoot across the sky. And then it kind of, the best way I can describe it is like a circular transition, like a film transition, the wipe just kind of appeared and the shooting star went into the middle of it and disappeared. And I went, the hell did I just see? And I kind of like looked down, focused my eyes, looked back up. And then one of those happened again and a star came out of it, or, you know, what looked like a shooting star came out of it and went into another one of those. And this repeated 4 or 5 times. And I was just like, okay, that's weird. Because initially what I thought was a star couldn't have been a star, because that wipe thing, you know, and that's the best way I can describe it. It's like a circular wipe in the sky, and then it just disappeared.
Right. And
so that,
one. I'm sorry for all the sniffing, folks. My allergies are horrifyingly bad. And again, with something like that, you didn't feel a sense of proximity. You didn't feel anything odd. You didn't you get a sense that you were being looked at.
My sense was almost that it was just a display for me, and then it was done.
Okay, but a display for you. That's good. That's good. What about the large scale one? Did you get the same sense of that? Not with that. Okay.
I saw that and went, what the hell am I looking at? And tried to rationally, you know, determine, is there a good explanation for what I'm seeing?
Okay. All right. And, I guess it'd be hard to tell with the wipe UFO that anything like feel like it broke up, or you have clear to and fro and experience and coming back in the house and all of that.
Yeah, I mean, there was nothing weird, nothing broken in the experience. But like I said, it was at a major transition point. So
gotcha. Okay.
And there's been a few other minor things here and there, like driving to one of my other radio shows that used to be in Geneva, which is north. I was driving, I had two people in the car with me. I see this bright in the field, like this light comes on. It looks like a stadium light, you know, it has the grids, like the four, or like four grids of lights, really bright lights, comes on in the field and then goes out. And I'm like, what the hell was that? And that was it. There was nothing more to it, but it was very distinct. It was very bright. And it's just a field. I mean, I can't imagine what would have caused those lights, but I don't attach, you know, neither person with me happened to be looking that way when it happened.
Right.
I just happened to look over at the passenger side and there it was in the field, and then it disappeared and it was gone. And I went, I can't explain that. Like, I don't necessarily attach anything paranormal to it. Paranormal, you know?
Right.
But I don't know what it could have been, because, I mean, it was just, like I said, it looked like physical lights you would see in a stadium or something, and there aren't those lights in that field, unless it was something massive attached to a tractor. But why would they flicker on and flicker off if that were the case?
Right.
Nor have I ever seen lights like that attached to a tractor.
Right. Yeah. I guess the only thing that I really haven't asked as far as what surrounds you. It seems like, well, for a lot of these things, there seems to be people around. Is that correct?
About 50% of them.
About 50% of them. Okay. Okay, so, like, as an example, and this is the only way I knew to really verbalize this as a question. Like, when I was playing in bands back in the 80s and early 90s, I mean, I think everybody at this point knows what even local band life is like. It's, you know, it's often fueled with liquor, cigarettes, dope, you know, girls of every ilk, you know, that kind of like promiscuous stuff, the drug abuse, the liquor overconsumption, all of that.
Decadence.
Yeah, just yeah. General decadence. I mean, can you think that, you know, because another one of the things that I'm trying to get into, or I'm trying to work towards it in the writing of the blog, is, you know, the notion of taboo and the notion of that taboo and forbidden things seem to surround, you know, paranormal events and paranormal experiences for people. It kind of feeds into the liminality. It kind of feeds into anti-structure a little bit. It also gets into all sorts of things again, and it depends on what society would deem as a taboo of one kind or another. And so there are things that are considered forbidden. In your, you know, just like I know you're big in the metal scene up in New York and all of that. So how much of that stuff was surrounding you and your life at that point? You know, the sex, the drugs, the rock and roll, has that been kind of a mainstay that, that you've been around, but didn't like me, like didn't partake in it. Like it's always right there, but you didn't partake in it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
In fact, I quit more bands in the '80s because I couldn't find anybody who wasn't sticking half a Peru up their nose. so it's like, for me, that's like, I'm out. Because we're not going anywhere. That's not, you know, like that dream of being in a professional music, that's not going to happen as long as these people are here. So I'm out. So you being in the metal scene up there, having a radio show, doing all this, working with bands all the time, does that kind of like being surrounded by these very considered taboo things by society, does that kind of figure into high states of activity in your life in one way or another?
No, because that's fairly constant, and
it is. Okay.
It really has nothing to do with. One of the things I did notice when I was going through my notes and stuff is that shortly after I turned 21, I drank a bit before I turned 21, just because, you know, it was a cool thing to do. It never did much to me, but I did notice that when I was drinking, experiences, especially like the psychic type stuff, would just go away.
Would go away. Okay.
And it would take weeks before it kind of kicked back in.
Yeah, and I think that was something that was found in the Ryan Institute studies with the Zinner cards, is that alcohol impaired that sort of psi phenomena.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, definitely.
And one of the things I noticed is that after I turned 21, when I would go to shows, I would occasionally have a beer or two. Nothing major. But in that time period where I was drinking very lightly on occasion, I had no weird experiences that entire time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you're psychic for sure. I mean,
yeah,
we haven't established that yet.
I hate that word because of the connotations around it.
Oh, I know.
Like I said, I like describing it as I just read something from a perspective that you didn't have at the time.
And
from what I understand, I mean, alcohol is apparently very bad for things like divination.
Really?
But is apparently quite, I mean, but it's sort of baked into a lot of spiritual traditions in terms of communing with spirits. I mean, if you look at, like, you know, the Afro-Caribbean traditions, there's a lot of rum libations that go on in those sort of situations.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think it affects everyone the same way. You know, maybe some people need the alcohol to relax enough to open themselves to this stuff.
You feel outside of the group when it comes to Well, when it comes to anything, I mean, when it comes to society in general, do you feel like an integrated member of society, or do you feel somewhat set aside outside of that?
I feel like I set myself aside to some degree.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, okay. Like I have an amazing circle of friends. I am incredibly lucky to know so many like awesome people, not just from Where Did the Road Go? This has added a whole new level to it, right. You know? But like my close friends are some of the most amazing people ever. And, I'm regularly bringing new people into my circle of friends. So I don't let, how did someone put it? Someone once called the last exit a place people could go and just be themselves and it was fine.
Right. Right.
And that apparently is the kind of environment I create around me.
Huh.
Because I'm not a judgmental person. And unless someone's really doing something where it's like, okay, you need to stop that.
Right. like we talked about earlier.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't happen too much. Like people just seem to get a sense of what's okay and what's not okay. We don't mess around. We you know, you can be yourself, you can have fun, no one's gonna give you a hard time, everything's cool.
Yeah.
So in a way I feel more integrated than I think a lot of people do because I have that such a strong circle of friends.
I think it's very unusual that you have a large circle of friends. So apparently, I mean, you know, and I don't get me wrong, it's not unheard of. I mean, but I think that you're one of those like that I have found pretty rare individuals that I've come across that have these that have essentially this kind of life experiences going on and are able to somehow balance that with friends and people and all of that. Because I think anybody who looks into this subject and delves into this subject will find that it's incredibly alienating from people. I mean, I have a lot of friends, but I also have a lot of friends I'll probably never meet.
Yeah, well, that happens, you know? Too.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, as far as local people, you know, most people, I'll get the thing like, your house ain't haunted. I'm like, yeah, we'll come over and spend the weekend. And they won't, of course. You know, they won't.
Well, I totally want to come over and put that crystal to my head.
You're welcome to do it. But you ain't sleeping here that night. You know,
that's fine.
That's a video blog if I've ever heard one.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I mean, I think it's unusual for you to have that. See, somehow you're one of these people that has a balance of some kind of an equilibrium with this stuff that,
Well, you know,
and
I have to wonder
because the thing that seems inherently different again is the mostly the lack of fear, the lack of the ability to rescind the notion of fight or flight, you know, and just kind of accept what's going on and perceive it as it is.
Balance is something that's really big with me, even in the name. Like I said, it kind of falls with the masculine feminine type of thing. It falls on opposite sides of the Kabbalah. Huh. It, you know, that idea of balance has always been there. It's like, okay, don't let it go too far this way or too far that way. And that was also something that I was shown in numerous type of pseudo dreams where they would try and show me to keep things balanced.
Yeah.
You know, that if you may like this, but if you go too far this way, you're going to neglect this side of things and everything's going to collapse.
Right. And balance is the ultimate betwixt and between, is it not?
Well, yes, that's true. Too.
But at the same time, I have to ask this, do you have, the only way I keep feeling bad because I keep referring to myself here while we're talking about you, but it's the only thing I have to compare it to in any kind of comparative experience. There is this has lit something in me that I can't stop for me. Like there was times where I was on a runaway train with my interest in this. And there was times where like now where I do keep it very much, at arm's distance when I can, when I choose to interact with it, I act differently. I behave differently. I do things differently around here. Do you have that consuming, burning, drive to understand more, see more, experience more, get a handle on anything like this. I mean, does that resonate with you, that kind of?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Hence why I would put your crystal to my head.
Right. Yeah, of course.
Let's see what happens.
And see, to be able to do that and have balance, Sarai, is like, I'm telling you, that's not easy.
I almost get depressed when I go through long periods where nothing new happens. It doesn't have to be anything major, but like something. And it's like when stuff doesn't happen, it's kind of like, oh, did I screw something up? Did I, you know, did I miss a step here?
I have a word for that. It's called bliss. yeah. I mean, I think you're one of those people that's just, somehow, you know, I wish they gave classes on it, you know?
Well, that's kind of what conversations like this are meant for, though, is that hopefully people out there who have had similar experiences can say, oh, maybe this isn't trying to kill me, or maybe I should look at it differently, or,
yeah,
you know, and people are always welcome to write me, if they have questions or they want to share their experiences. I mean, we do listener stories. Not that I've done too many recently, but I'm planning on catching up with the large amount of mail I have and get some of these listener stories out. But I'm always willing to, if I can help people in any way, I'm always willing to do that.
Yeah.
I had a lot of people write me after I did the first show on Kundalini because it helped them. Because now suddenly they had a grasp of what they've been experiencing, because it's just, you know, it's not like Kundalini yoga. I mean, even though it's the same type of energy, it comes on so differently and it behaves so differently that people don't, you know, there's no connection made there.
I think that's the perplexing point for me.
Well, we're about out of time, and I think Joshua is fading.
Yeah, I'm struggling a little bit.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
He wants to go snuggle up with his tuba and get some sleep.
Yeah, it's tuba snuggling time.
But thanks for grilling me, guys.
Oh,
no, it was awesome.
Yeah, I'm sorry that I couldn't tie things together and make it and come up with anything that I'm not kidding, and I'm not saying this to, you know, for responses. I'm just saying, I feel like this was like a pretty miserable failure on my part to say, like, take me through this, you know, because you know, your initial thing is the crux of this to me, and that comes from a very hazy point in your history.
Yeah.
So it's hard to move through a chronological step by step to see how did things morph and change. Although I got a sense of that, I look forward to your book immensely.
Yeah, me too. If I can ever get it done,
join the club.
All right, and to take you out this week, we're going to be hearing a band called Mechanism. I've played them before, and they're one of my favorite bands. And we're going to hear a track from them called Mouth of God. And you can find them, well, all over the place. It's Mekanism, two words, sometimes with a dash, Mechanism. So here you go, Mouth of God. See you next time.
dead before I was born. The legend inside us, the spirit reminds us